Should I wait until 20 to start?
Yeah. Okay. So the next talk is on an exact enumeration of distance hereditary graphs. Paper is by Cedric Scholf and Eric Pusey, and Jeremy Limpausel here is giving the talk, please.
Thank you all for being here. And I'm going to talk to you about how we were able to get the enumeration for a large class of graphs. So the motivation of this talk and the motivation of this whole work is pretty abstract. So in analytic combinatorics, we've become really good experts at analyzing trees, in particular because trees are nicely decomposable. So we can analyze all sorts of varieties of trees and all sorts of parameters. And there's still ongoing work and it's still a rich field, but there's a lot less results for graphs because graphs are very hard to decompose. They have cycles in all generality, and you usually cannot in all generality have one decomposition that's going to allow you to characterize a whole large classes of graph. So the point of this talk and the point of this work is to try to see from a decomposition that we chose, what is the largest class of graphs that we can characterize, and how can we systematically have results on the enumerations of families of graphs that we didn't yet know well about. So our main idea is very simple. It's just to combine in a good way certain existing techniques and tools. So we're combining graph decomposition, 3D tree decompositions of graphs, a framework by John and Paul called graph labeled trees, techniques from analytic combinatorics, which are standard, and then some result from species theory that has been ported to analytic combinatorics a decade ago. And our goal, our end results, we're very happy when we've obtained an enumeration that's exact, the asymptotic bounds, the grammar, and everything that comes automatically from that. So in this talk, I'll present some definitions. I try to be light on them. I will try to illustrate how this approach works on a subset of distance hereditary graphs, and then I'll try to talk about perspectives and some future works. So the context, and I want to mention some spiritual successors to this work, would be a 2002 paper by Timoni and Ravelo Manana, which already started to count co-graphs using analytic combinatorics, and that was an important result because co-graphs are an important kind of graph that are complete by the modular decomposition. The next paper that's also very important is one from 2007 by Nakano and Al, who realized that distance hereditary graphs, because of their vertex incremental characterization, can be encoded in some sort of data structure. And from there, they obtained some rather rough upper bound, but still an improvement at the time. And then John and Paul introduced a very novel way of looking at an old decomposition, the split decomposition, using what they call graph-labeled trees, and that provides a much more visual way of seeing the output of this decomposition and characterizing it symbolically. So you might ask, what are distance hereditary graphs, how useful they are? Well, I just wanted to give you an example. There are about 1,500 results on distance hereditary graphs. They're a well-studied class of graphs. And to compare, this isn't necessarily meaningful, but here are the results of papers on other types of graphs. So I'm saying this isn't meaningful because, for instance, you know, we have less papers apparently on perfect graphs than interval graphs. But interval graphs and chordal graphs and co-graphs and block graphs and zero parallels graphs are all sorts of perfect graphs. But it gives you a good idea of what people are interested in. So here's the main, I would say, papers on distance hereditary graphs that have led to here. First, they were defined by Hawarka because of the property that all induced paths between two vertices are the same. Cunningham introduces in 82 the split decomposition as the joint decomposition, and at the time I'm not sure he realized that DH graphs were the totally decomposable graphs by that decomposition, and we'll see what that means. In 86, Bandel and Mulder gave a very important result. Vertex incremental characterization would provide a way to get an exhaustive enumeration, but computational intensely. Hammer and Maffrey realized that DH graphs are totally decomposable by the split decomposition. Spinrad gave an upper bound, one of the first on the enumeration sequence. It was later refined by Nakano, who gave this bound that's within a factor of 2, and we gave an exact enumeration in the Phillips synthetics. So I'm first going to talk about what graph labeled trees are, and this is the formal definition, which doesn't necessarily matter. What you want to know is that they are composite trees that are going to have external nodes which correspond to the actual vertices of the graph. And then there's going to be these big internal nodes, which are the internal graph labels. So here there's a mistake. It's missing the edges and the labels for the vertices. So these internal nodes can have different types of graphs. They can have stars. They can have cliques. They can have any subsets of graphs. And viewing the trees in this way makes them a lot easier to specify. So now let's talk about the split decomposition. The main idea with the split decomposition is that it starts at a graph and it splits it into groups of vertices that are interconnected. So we, for instance, start from this graph with each of its vertices, and we split this subset of connected, which are a clique, and the remaining graphs, which are a cycle. And this connection here duplicates one of the vertices here, but it doesn't correspond to a duplication of the external vertices. Therefore, we still have the same graph at the end. A more intuitive way of seeing how the split decomposition translates is that two vertices in the original graph are connected in the split decomposition if there's an alternating path of one edge between two labels and one edge inside of two labels that connects the two vertices in the resulting split decomposition tree. And two important things is that these trees are canonical. There is only one, if you forget about the ways of rerouting the trees, there's only one such tree, so it's a bijection. And then now coming to what I was saying about totally decomposable, distance hereditary graphs are totally decomposable, which means that their internal labels are either cliques or stars. And these graphs are very easy because they have either no symmetries at all here, all the vertices are indistinguishable, or here it only has the cinder, which is distinguished from the other vertices. And that's going to be important in the way that we decompose the graphs. So now for those of you who are maybe less familiar with analytic combinatorics, a quick refresher of one of the main tools, which is the symbolic method. So in the symbolic method, we specify a combinatorial class A by using small building blocks. I like to think of it as tinker toys. So we have small building blocks that either have one contribute one unit of weight or zero unit of weight, and then ways to combine them. And what's important is that these classes can be specified recursively, and we're interested in indexing them by the size of the eventual objects that's counted by the numbers of z's. So for example, binary trees can be specified in this way. So binary tree is either a leaf, which does not count towards the size, or it's a left binary tree, an internal node that counts towards the size, and a right binary tree. So these are all the binary trees of size 1, with the internal nodes marked by these circles. So the framework that's epitomized in this book by Flageolet and Sedgwick says that there's a way to translate these specifications into generating functions, and from these generating functions, a lot of analysis theorems allows to extract the asymptotic, and some algorithms and computer algebraic system allows you to easily derive linear ways to get the coefficients, or quadratic ways to get the coefficients. So basically, once we have a grammar such as this, this is one of the most powerful tools because with this tool set, we can derive a whole set of information on these objects. So that's why our goal is to translate graphs into these grammars. So now let's start working on an actual class of graphs. And I told you three-leaf powers are a subset of DH graphs, which are used, I think, in neurology because they know that are used in phylogenetics because they somewhat model what a an idealized phylogenetic tree could look like. So if I understand perfectly, which I'm not sure I do. So a connected graph is a three-leaf power graph if it results from a tree by replacing every vertex by a click of arbitrary size. So that's one possible characterization that's often used. An algorithmic characterization is we start from an initial vertex and we repeat a whole bunch of these operations and a whole bunch of these operations in a certain order. So the operation pendant vertex is I pick an existing vertex and I attach a dangling vertex to it. And the true or strong twin operation is I pick one vertex and I copy its neighborhood onto a new vertex that I add. So with this characterization that's very useful, we can get an exhaustive generation, which is useful to test whether our results are correct, and is also the way that a lot of people have been looking at these graphs. So what's important is this result from John and Paul with their graph labeled trees. They say the graph labeled tree of a 3LP graph is exactly characterized by these conditions. Its split tree only has click nodes and star nodes, no degenerate prime nodes. And the set of star nodes forms a connected subtree of this split tree. And the center of the star nodes is incident either to a leaf or to a click node. Well, with these conditions, we are able to model the grammar of this tree. And I'll show you how one of these constraints translates. So for instance, the center of a star node is incident either to a leaf or a click node. So here we see a star entered through a center described here. So we're holding a split decomposition tree by one of its internal nodes, and we're holding it by the center of that star. So then we have to characterize all the subtrees that can exit from this center. So the subtrees that can exit from the center are either an extremity, and there has to be two of them. And extremities can either be connected to a leaf, which is a click or just a single node, or they can be connected to another star by its extremity. Okay, so that can give you a certain flavor of how we describe these trees by traversing them in a certain way and seeing what kind of connectivity we could have. So once we have this tree, one important thing about this tree is that it's rooted. We start at one point and we traverse the tree, but we could have started at any other point of the tree, any other leaf of the tree, and gotten the exact same tree. So we have to account from the fact that multiple trees are going to be able to be rooted different ways. So to get around this, we use this dissymmetry theorem from species theory, which is able to, by which we can recover the pointed tree class. From the pointed tree class, we can obtain the unrooted tree class. And we do that by putting a bijection between different ways of rooting. So you can root at a vertex, but you can also root at an edge or a directed edge. And these two classes can easily be obtained from this one. And by doing an algebraic formal subtraction, we can obtain this enumeration. This tool is very easy to apply once you've understood it. It's very powerful. One of the issues is that the grammar that you get is no longer symbolic, and you can only get an enumeration from it, not random generation, and parameter analysis is a little bit harder to do. But for that, there's another tool called cycle pointing, a lot more difficult to explain and to apply, but that ends up with an actual grammar at the end. So now, the unrooted grammar, once we've applied the dissymmetry theorem, it's the same as previously with the same terms here that have not changed. But it includes now some rerooted trees at certain new vertices and the edges, as was described. What was I saying? Oh, I was saying these terms come from these rerouting terms. Okay? And so here, this subtraction is not a combinatorial operation. That's what I was telling you about, that this is not completely a grammar. But it's okay because from this, we can obtain a full enumeration. So the full enumeration, we use it experimentally by using a computer algebra system. This is the grammar in Maple. And using Comstruct, we can easily obtain a very large enumeration in quadratic time. So then to apply, to get the asymptotic term, we apply some well-known theorems by Dermota Lalia Woods. So we let the combinatorial system S be the one that I've shown you before. We translate it to an equation on jittering functions using the dictionary I showed you of analytic combinatorics. And then we compute the determinant of the Jacobian of this matrix, and we solve the system numerically for which there are ready-made libraries. And by again applying this, there are a few tweaks to do because of the fact that we're using set operators that have symmetries, but it's doable, and at the end we can automatically obtain that the singularity, which means the exponential term of this class, is this one in bold. So in summary, we have used the examples of three-leaf power graphs because it is simpler, but all of these results apply directly on distance hereditary graph. So that allows us to give exact and asymptotic results that are tight for two major classes of graphs which were previously unknown. For three-leaf power graphs, here's the enumeration. The asymptotics, we know not only the exponential growth that I described previously here, but we have also been able to show the polynomial growth and the constant factor. And same thing for the distance hereditary graphs. So this is a random distance hereditary graph that was generated using the cycle-pointed version of this grammar. So to recapitulate, the method is from the split decomposition, we have these graph-labeled trees. From these graph-labeled trees, we obtain symbolic grammar. With this symbolic grammar and the tool set of analytic combinatorics, we're able to obtain either an enumeration or the asymptotic theorems or even randomly generated objects. So this allows us to have a lot of very nice results that I enjoy on these classes. For instance, there's also a lot of subclasses of distance hereditary. And one of the results of this work that I don't have here is for a big number, 10 subclasses that have been studied and are of good interest, we are able to give a diagram of the densities of these included subclasses to see how they relate to each other and how restrictive different conditions are with respect to the sets that they generate. So what we can do now that we have this method that produces grammar is we can do a lot of parameter analysis on these graphs, the average degree of certain vertices, how many clicks they have, and so on and so on, everything that we've been doing for a lot of other classes and specifically for trees. My main focus right now is to extend this methodology. I told you these trees have star nodes and click nodes, but I'd like to extend this methodology to non-totally decomposable graphs that have prime nodes. And we already have some promising results on cactus graphs, which if I have 1 minute, I'll show you a brief excerpt of, but also on parity graphs in which the prime nodes are any bipartite graph and which presents some very interesting challenges. There are also some applications on encoding. So Nakano gave some good results on encoding, but R suggests that there's a better encoding of these graphs that can be attained. And some additional results by Shi suggest that from any vertex incremental characterizations, which are plentiful in graph algorithms, we can obtain an automatic very tight bound. And then there's random generations that I've already mentioned. And so finally, in my last minute, I wanted to show you that with this method in a very short amount of time, because the prime node for cactus graphs are so simple, we were able to determinatively give the enumeration of all sorts of cactus graphs. So cactus graphs as you can see, they are graphs composed with nodes that are polygons. So they can either be mixed or pure if the polygons are always the same size, labeled or unlabeled, and plane, which means that we take into account the rotation around each vertices or not. So a lot of papers have been published. The main ones are from Arari and Uhlenbeck in 52, which had a method that then scaled to different sizes of polygons, and from Bona and co-authors, which enumerated specifically plane cacti, but I do not think extended beyond plane cacti. And our methodology extends to any kind of cacti and provides random generation grammars and asymptotics for all of them. So to recap, what I've been trying to do is to try to, instead of looking at specific classes, trying to find a broader method that is able to handle a lot of classes and then have these grammars and the OEIS and let a lot of people analyze these graphs a lot better than we're able to do now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for questions? No questions? So, big outlook at the end. Thank you very much. And.